Danny Keene will be at the Sugar Bowl. Nine Otten at 8. Joe D'Elia and Thieves will be at the Bay Street Theater. Sag Harbor. The Joni Project will be at the Oakland Tavern in Seacliff. Joe Vecino will be at Barbecue in Patchogue. Nine. Yeah.
Hi, this is Jim Wiener, co-host of Jazz on the Air, heard Sunday afternoons between 2:30 and 5 here on WUSB. This has been your concert billboard. Check out the online version at WUSB.fm.
Yes, yes, indeed. WUSB.fm is our website, and it is WUSB Stony Brook at 6:01 p.m. on a Tuesday night. That time means it is time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
It's off the wall.
It is off the wall. Wow. Here we are.
Yeah. And I'm Kyle, and this is Emmanuel.
This is Emmanuel, and we're starting the show earlier and earlier every week, it seems.
I don't mind it.
Well, things are working, and when things work, we can work with things, and that makes it a lot easier. So, yes, here we are, a full, 90 seconds earlier than normal. Maybe it'll be even earlier than that next week.
That's right.
Wow.
We could. We keep people guessing, and it keeps us fresh and on our toes behind the board here. So,
are you ready? Are you ready for the big debate tomorrow?
Yeah,
the second debate is coming tomorrow.
Wait, so soon?
Yeah.
All.
It's been a while. It's been a month.
All the way
back
1 month ago.
Yeah.
We were looking at Megyn Kelly.
Well, we won't be looking at her tomorrow night.
And her face.
Yeah, because it's going to be on CNN.
Okay.
So
they've got a different crew, whole different
approach.
They're a bit more like I don't know, you have like Tim Burton and I'm not even going to drag him into this. You have like different styles, you know, like filmmaking styles, you know. One's like WWF, like wrestling, right?
One's like Birth of a Nation. One's like just the reactionary racist redneck, the three R's, okay?
Got it.
And the other is more like, I don't know, at least trying to do news.
Scorsese or something, yeah.
Which one I'm talking about, that's an exercise for the listener.
It's a true puzzle. So we have that to basically be really anxious for. Who's going to say what? What issue will rise to the surface? What cream, if you will, political flotsam and jetsam, what will emerge?
I would vote for that. I would vote for flotsam and jetsam. That would be the running ticket for the Republicans.
Flotsam and jetsam.
They definitely would have an advantage over just about anybody else.
2016. Okay, no, I like that.
Who were we listening to yesterday on the radio? Was that Carson we were listening to?
Yeah, it was. It was Ben Carson. Yeah, Dr. Ben Carson.
Okay, why is everybody calling? Okay, you're a doctor. We get it. But, you know, right now, you're not. You're not running as a doctor. You're running as a candidate. So I'm just not in favor of people putting doctor in front of their names. It's a bit showy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think a lot of careers deserve to be recognized.
I think there should be more titles. Doctors shouldn't be the only ones with such titles.
Well, if, say, a lord was running, you wouldn't say Lord Barack Obama, you know, or, as an example. Lawyers, barrister, whatever. You know, I get spam mail from people like that all the time.
Yeah, sometimes they have suffix, though. They're like
PhD is the same thing as Dr. So-and-so, PhD.
Right.
They get two. They get a prefix and a suffix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just, okay, we get it. You're a doctor, but you don't have to remind us with every time you say your damn name.
What if, like, farmer had FR on the end,
you know? Farmers have a difficult job, all right? It takes a lot of work. You got to get up really early.
Or in the beginning, FR.
There's no golf on Wednesday, I'll tell you that.
Exactly, yeah.
It's hard, and I just don't like this whole thing of just elevating yourself in stature because you have a particular profession.
Well, in his case, I think it's very subtle. And
how is it subtle? It's mentioned every conversation. Every conversation comes up that, are you a good doctor? Are you a mediocre doctor? You are a doctor, though. Are you not? And it's in his name. And it's constantly being said. Isn't Rand Paul also a doctor? I think he is. But he doesn't say it nearly as much.
Right. It's an academic doctor versus someone whose profession is the practice of medicine. But you're right. It is bandied about it quite a bit. There's a lot of I guess that's like profession dropping. You drop your profession constantly.
A backup plan in case it doesn't work out.
Well, but it amounts to talking shop, and in the mix of what ostensibly should be maybe conversation about the issues, conversation about the race, what he's committed to doing, what his administration, what his cabinet, who knows?
You might as well stick your IQ next to your name, because it's implying that you're of a higher nature, a higher stature than the other people. Not too hard to do with that field of people, granted, but I just don't. I think it detracts. I think it's unnecessary.
Doesn't make him quite as relatable.
Yeah.
But it shows he's more he's competing in the field. It's more like this. He's more concerned with the peripheral. Like it seems more like somebody you play up against peers in a race like that, instead of being relatable.
It's good to know that in case somebody on stage chokes on their own logic, he'll be there to bring them back. But again, it just seems like a distraction. But it also takes away from what we were listening to. I didn't even know it was him, because he was saying all kinds of really ignorant things about immigrants, particularly Syrians.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was a CNN interview or BBC or something, where he was basically saying how, you know, we don't know who they are. We can't trust them. They you know, there's young males coming, and they could easily be radicalized. and this xenophobic talk that was really beneath him, I think, beneath most people. And you look at what's going on in other parts of the world. Barack Obama this week, or last week actually, said, yes, you know, we're going to try and bring in 10,000 Syrians. 10,000 Syrians. Wow, that's great. That's wonderful. You know how many Syrians Germany is bringing in? They're bringing in 800,000. That's 80 times. Wait a minute. Is that 80 times? Yeah, 80 times more.
80 times,
80
yeah.
times more. And it gets even better. Germany is a smaller country. I don't know what the population of Germany is, but we're something like, what, 300 million? Let's say they're a third of that. And I think I'm being generous in saying that. I can look it up. But then you multiply 80 times 3, and all of a sudden it's like 240 times more now. That's crazy. That's insane that that's all we can do. And the fact that we're trying to do that is controversial. People are objecting, oh, my God, bringing in 10,000 Syrians. Most of them are probably women and children, but who knows what they'll turn into someday because, well, they're not quite human, are they? It's insane. You look at what other countries are doing, and I don't mean countries like Hungary and Poland. I mean countries like Germany and Sweden, who are actually opening the doors and welcoming refugees who really need a place to go. And think of how that will play in the future. Think of the citizens that will be growing in those countries. When you come to a place, a foreign place, and you are welcomed like that and treated with generosity, you're not going to become an enemy of that state. You're going to become one of the best citizens of that state. And it's just a shame that we don't seem to recognize that here.
Their goodwill is, going to have a lot of mileage, I think, in the future. It goes a long way to make the distinction between people that are fighting to war, you know, that are war fighters and people that are civilians caught up in it. And I think we're really quick to lump them in, and it's fear. It's that fear being replayed and restoked in the populace. Now, the end, instead of gaining territory or whatever, invading somebody, to this end is to keep our borders closed. And it's nebulous, right? It's just this idea. And here we go, and stoking up fear to elicit this reaction from people. It's unfounded. It doesn't make any sense. You have to research this stuff. You have to really look at what's happening, and instead of repackaging hearsay and anecdote to become rhetoric that affects people, that then is turned around and becomes offense or becomes some other overt like racism, ultimately, or xenophobia, as you said. I mean that is a cycle that will continue and fulfill itself unless you really stand up and respect people as humans, right? And stick up for what's right in the situation. Yeah, I mean maybe you're fighting with people. Maybe you think the entire thing is insane and makes no sense, but you should still offer people who are trying to escape it. Yeah, maybe they were associated because they happened to be born someplace, but you can't conflate necessarily and jump to conclusions, especially in a war, right? Like in a wartime, if they're not coming at you with arms and stuff, I think you should allow, like, let help people with refuge and so on before you jump to conclusions of them being, you know, suspicious or up to something or affiliated with something else. They haven't even had a chance to have seek refuge.
Let's, you know, if we're this afraid, let's at least admit that it's out of guilt more than anything else, because we did sort of cause a situation. We did, by destabilizing the entire region, that planted the seeds for groups like Daesh. Did I say it right?
Daesh, yeah.
That's how you say ISIL if you're cool, or ISIS if you're even more cool. We basically destabilized the entire region, and fanaticism spread like wildfire. Directly, indirectly, however you want to phrase it, we definitely bear responsibility. But you can't just throw money at problems like this. You have to actually throw some humanity at it as well. And Germany seems to get this, and unfortunately, we don't. Now, obviously, we're not nearly as close. It's not as easy for the refugees to get here. But do you think if we were right next door, we would be opening up our borders in the way that Germany has over the past couple of weeks? I don't think so, and that's really kind of shameful. Listening to Lord Corson yesterday, listening to him yesterday, he was saying, well, you know, the countries that are near them, the countries that speak their own language and share their religion, they're not doing enough, so then why should we? I always love that logic, you know. They're not doing anything, so why don't we not do anything as well? Because they're not doing it first. You know, it's so childish.
It's a talking point. It's rhetoric. It's a one-liner, but it's incredibly complicated. There are reasons. It has to do with the factions, right? And Sunnis and Shiites and the complexities of the neighborhood.
Yeah, it's not as simple as
kind of oversimplifies it, but that plays right into let's be fearful. It is becoming this evidence to just dig up, mm-hmm. and that then justifies some reaction or another that is insensitive, right? Not in the human interest, and not in the interest of the people involved, and
right.
And it's not showing compassion. So
yeah, and we're pretty good at that. We've learned from the best, but it's we're supposed to be. We hold ourselves up as a model to the rest of the world. Well, let's start acting like that. Let's start showing compassion, being generous, opening up our doors and walls.
If anything, not throw bombs at the situation anymore.
Literally,
because
yeah.
We're already there. We're kind of in the neighborhood, uh-huh. insofar as the proxies and things going on with Russia.
But what do you think of that?
Starting to be in the neighborhood.
What do you think of Russia coming in and starting to arm or continuing to arm the Assad regime under the belief that they are fighting ISIL or Daesh or whatever? Do you think there's any truth to that, or are they just taking advantage of a crazy situation?
Well, I heard someone speaking about this on my favorite channel this week, and it was really well characterized, because they have a client in Syria, right? Mm-hmm. They sell, they have contracts, they have deals with the Syrian government.
Nothing new there.
Right? And this guy was talking a lot about, like, the weapons and the kinds of things that are our involvement, and we are in the area, like, the kinds of weapons and things that are being used very often come from the States, right? We supply quite a bit of the artillery and so on that's in the area. So the Russians are sort of interested in honoring their obligations to a degree. Like, that plays into it, and our... Like, we have a relationship with the Saudis for military supplies and support and so on as well. And we use their, I believe, some of their air bases. I'm not sure about that exactly, but obviously airspace is an issue. We're allied with them, also Egypt and Turkey.
A lot of countries in the area. But the thing that gets me about this is that we're acting like Russia is doing something new, that they're basically changing the rules. And they've been supporting the Syrian regimes over the years, for many years. So it's in their interest, obviously, to keep that regime propped up, legitimate or not. And if that regime is fighting an organization like ISO, well, then that's what they're going to point to as saying this is particularly justified now.
Right.
I don't know why this is a problem. You know, every year the NHL has its regular season, and they have the playoffs where, you know, a bunch of teams play, and then some teams win, some teams lose, and they play the other team, and eventually you have one team playing another team. Right now, we're all on the same side against ISIL. So
Right. Once
we defeat ISIL, then we can face off against each other, United States versus Russia, and it'll be just like the NHL, you know, a bunch of playoffs. But right now, you know, there's so many sides, and nobody knows who to back. And, well, we know who not to back, but there's so many enemies.
Well,
there's the Assad regime, there's ISIL, there's Russia, there's the Kurds, there's the United States.
Well, if we face off, it'll be like Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. If we face off with Russia, it'll be like Afghanistan.
It'll be worse than Afghanistan.
It'll be worse than Afghanistan.
I'm kidding, of course, but...
It's complex.
Think we need to realize that they're not just coming out of nowhere and destabilizing the situation. If anyone destabilized the situation, it was us.
They've had a huge hand in the area for a long time. They're regionally much more, it's a lot more logical for them to be over there.
Look at how things have changed since 1990.
Exactly.
When the Soviets controlled a huge amount of space that we now have bases in, countries that are now NATO countries.
The fact that Hungary is registering people for the Schengen zone is kind of amazing.
Right. And, okay, you can say this is good or this is a positive step, but let's at least acknowledge it's different. And from Russia's perspective, that is a big threat. Things have changed radically. All right. Now, if Russia is trying to hold on to one of its last dictatorships that they're propping up, we don't have to like it, but we can at least understand that that's what they're trying to do. And maybe through that understanding, we can reach some kind of a dialogue. But by painting the situation like they're just coming in here and trying to cause all kinds of mayhem, is it really that simple? Is that really what's going on? You know, I think we have a common enemy here, and in the time where we can unite against that common enemy, maybe we can have a constructive conversation and plan something for the future.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're seeing some of that. But there's a lot of finger pointing and stuff going on, and some of the numbers just as far as the amount of military power and stuff that surrounds that area of Daesh, which is like 30,000 fighters or something, they were saying. It's really interesting because...
It's not that many. You could fill Shea Stadium with these people, and that's it.
There are millions of troops around that area mm-hmm. that... So it's a lot about coordination and interests and there are multiple things going on in some of these areas, and so it's really interesting to watch some of the dynamics and just how people respond and react. So,
By the way, I'm aware that Shea Stadium doesn't exist anymore, but I still call whatever is there now that, because I don't want to use corporate names. This is my nature. So
was I supposed to get that or something?
No, I don't think so.
I just
said it without thinking.
A cute reference. Gotcha.
Yeah. We'll get letters otherwise, and I feel I have to acknowledge this now. Cut it off at the pass, so to say. Facebook is adding a dislike button. That's the other big news. Hang on, I had the other tab. I did check, by the way. I checked Germany's population, 81 million. United States is about 320 million, so it's about a fourth. So 80 times 4, it's about 320 times the amount of refugees they are accepting based on their population. And probably a lot more if you base it on the landmass.
Yeah, but it's not about whether the U.S. can handle that many refugees. It's not a capacity problem. We are large amounts of poor people with no services and... Oh, this is awful. And I mean, no, I don't want to say that that's our regular... crowd here in the U.S., but we're uniquely positioned as a wealthy country to help the downtrodden and the people that need our help. It's a social, cultural accepting that responsibility, taking that on, I think, is where we have problems. It's not that we cannot.
Do we still stand for that? Is that still our mission? I haven't heard much of that lately. I've heard just a lot of fear and hatred and things like that.
I don't know. Maybe people will call in. Let us know if that is the current the status quo with American social attitudes. OTW@2600.com or 631-632-6901. Maybe we'll take phone calls in like 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
631-632-6901. Please add yourself to this conversation. Join us and maybe have some comments. Maybe you've seen some things in the news and or would like us to expand on any of this.
Well, the dislike button is definitely the thing that people are talking about now. Facebook apparently is finally going to do it. They're going to add a dislike. People have been clamoring for this for a long, long time. According to Mark Zuckerberg, he said, making something so simple is surprisingly complicated. After years of people demanding the option to dislike a Facebook post, the company is finally ready. What is so hard about it? I honestly cannot grasp why it would be hard simply to add a function that just says this number of people dislike this. That's all it is counting how many people dislike something. It doesn't have to do anything more than that. People just want a way to register their disapproval of something. And you know, it feels weird to like bad news, but you're acknowledging it, and you can acknowledge it in a different way by disliking. I don't get Facebook. I really don't. A lot of people use Facebook. A lot of people swear by it. For me, I can never find anything that's relevant. I get notifications that, hey, somebody mentioned you here, or go onto my page. I can't find it anywhere. It doesn't jump out at you. The interface is terrible. I don't really believe in sharing everything there is to share, all kinds of pictures and comments and things like that.
You know, it's not even the technology that bothers me. The type of people that use Facebook, I don't want to be that type of person. Mm-hmm. There, I said it. I mean, I'm sure Facebook is great. The technology is probably awesome. Mm-hmm. But the kinds of people that swear by it, not my crowd, man.
But
not my crowd.
It's weird because a lot of old people use Facebook, but then you have a younger crowd that uses Facebook as well.
Good for them.
But I don't, so what kind of people are those people? That's what I'm trying to figure out, because I agree, it's not my crowd, but it seems like it's multiple kinds of people use it, and I just don't understand why.
It's like people that swear by home shopping networks. I'm sure it works.
Wow.
It's probably great, but I'm not interested.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, it's true. We've talked about this on the other show, about people not sending emails like they used to, instead communicating through social networks. And it's so transient. It doesn't last. It disappears within a day. It's really hard to find things. And you can change things, too. You can go back and erase your own comments or change your own comments. And I don't like things like that. If you send somebody a letter, you sent them a letter. You can't unsend it.
But it's not social media. That's necessarily what I disagree with. It's not, I mean, yeah, word processors, there's been a lot of them, right? Just because there was one word processor ever made doesn't make it the word processor, right? So the phenomena of social media, the power of it, the altruistic wonders of it.
Right.
Can be enjoyed.
Oh, absolutely.
You could create your own social media platform with very rudimentary tools. It doesn't have to be that, right? But it's so funny that the idea of it is encapsulated by an entity like friggin' Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it doesn't, I mean, and it single-handedly ruined the phenomena at the same time. I don't know what I'm trying to say. But it's not that my critique is of that. It's just, what does it turn you into, really? I don't know. I guess I'm getting more existential.
Well, it turns you into less of an individual, I think.
I think you can be social without it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that I'm willing to say with confidence.
It's all about collecting likes, collecting friends who aren't really friends. You know?
Like,
look at the number of friends you have on Facebook. Those aren't your friends. Those are people that just click buttons and you click the button in return. It doesn't make them a friend. A friend is somebody who has your back when you're like on the run or something like that. And can you say that about the 1,700 people that you consider yourselves friends with? I can't.
It's like collecting phone numbers. Or having a big Rolodex.
Uh-huh.
You know, go back even further,
and
right?
It's a treasure trove for those people that are trying to spy on your life or get information about other people, telemarketers of all sorts, you name it.
I used to collect a lot of phone numbers. I mean, people, you'd interact, oh, could I exchange numbers, you get information from people, or even business cards. And I don't really care anymore. Yeah. You know, but those are the kinds of analogies. I find that it, you know, there are a lot of mediums and modes. I guess I look at it through that kind of artistic lens too. That, yeah, if it's an important enough medium and mode for that particular interaction, then I'll accept it. I'll embrace it. But I don't like want to lean. I don't want to be dependent on any one thing. You know, it's diversification.
I think people should know how to use these things. I think people should use these things.
Uh huh.
But
yeah.
They shouldn't switch over to them and not use anything else. Or let it take over their lives in a significant way. I consider it to be like a game. You know, play it for a while, move on to something else, but don't let it run your life. And too many people let social media run their lives.
Yeah.
It means too much to be accepted by a bunch of icons, literally icons.
And it's honestly, there are parallels with the singularity too, because you're letting a robot, you're letting automation, and this is what it is. It's like the emergence of automation, right? You can automate your calendar, automate sync this, you know, communicate that, unified communications all over the place, right? You are embracing automation, but if you let it control you, mm-hmm. it will drive you off a cliff,
right.
Literally.
Right. As literally. Will anything. As will any piece of technology or any group of people or philosophy, all sorts of things that you might just feel too strongly about.
Yeah, and they I mean, so anyway, beware, because I hope, I mean, maybe these people that enjoy these things would be enlightened and have fantastic conversations about robotics, or if they're the dismissive types. And you know, then they don't see this very thing right in their hand, right in front of their nose. Taking away, really, from their quality of life. And so, anyway, buyer beware.
Yes. I don't get how a dislike button can be so complicated.
No, I mean, I guess you just, make it live, you test it a little bit, and then you put it on the site, and is it there? Okay, it's there. Okay, somebody disliked something, and then you check to make sure it was disliked, and then you, I guess you're done. And then you try the next thing. The next thing on your to-do list.
It's not a complicated request. They might be making it more complicated with whatever features it carries with it, but those aren't necessary.
I feel like it's going to appear in some cases, but some cases you can't dislike something because that's not socially acceptable. There'll be some weird outside, you know, outlying test case. Of hilarity once it's actually been put through paces. So we'll see. Dislike something, everyone. Go out and dislike everything.
Yeah. I can get behind that.
And then go get a breakfast sandwich at never mind. Okay. All hours of the day.
Yes.
What else you got? Come on. There's got to be some other news.
Yeah, well, you know what? They're actually doing something out east, which I think is kind of interesting.
They're always doing interesting
things.
They
are. We spend a lot of time going out east. And
we like exploring.
It's a fun place to explore. It's all sorts of new things and just old things as well. But in Shoreham, the site of the almost nuclear power plant that was fortunately stopped, residents are now, some residents, are going to court. Are you ready for this? To stop a new 60-acre solar array on what is currently a sod farm. And there's also a separate project at a golf course across the road that's awaiting approval to start construction next April. Surveyors have been seen staking out the sod farm with construction expected to start almost any day. That's according to developers lawyers for developer S Power. Land for the project officially transferred from the Lalio sod farms to S Power a couple of weeks ago. Acting State Supreme Court Justice Joseph Fornati on Friday denied residents, this was actually two Fridays ago, denied residents a temporary restraining order that would have blocked construction after Fornati previously threw out most residents' claims in their original lawsuit. Residents had argued that the project failed to get the proper environmental review, that its LIPA contract was invalid, that it was an eyesore, there were lower property values. Okay, you know, this is really annoying to me because you have something really positive, like a solar array. We've seen these in Germany.
We've actually been pretty inspired by this stuff.
Very inspired.
It's everywhere now, if you haven't realized it. I've seen it flying in from the West Coast.
Renewable energy overseas is a big thing, and it needs to get bigger here. Here, you have a situation where something really positive is being launched out east, a solar array and something that will generate renewable power, and people are objecting to it. I cannot understand this. These are the same people that embraced the nuclear power plant when it was being built. You know why? Because it lowered their taxes. That's the reason. And something like this, which obviously benefits everybody, is something they object to. It's just, how closed-minded can you possibly be?
Well, and I have really come to the conclusion as I've gotten a little more experience that, you know, you could have a tax break for those panels too,
yes,
if it was negotiated well, if it was something that people got behind and really worked on. You too could be getting subsidies and things. It's just that nuclear power, they get in there and actually and push for that,
mm-hmm,
and then it you know eventually filters out to the taxpayers. Oh, I'm going to get lower taxes. Well, you know, things like renewable energy, you get a little bit of that too if you work on it as a city and try to get some kind of subsidies for it. And you get the benefit of it not having thousands of year half-lives for the waste and so on and so forth, but that's just details.
So we're looking at a 60-acre and a 127-acre solar array being built in the next couple of years, which I think is great.
This is good. I think it's very good. And renewable, like, pretty much I think you're going to start seeing this really becoming affordable. Retrofitting, energy saving has been a big thing in households for a long time, but I think diversifying your power sources, selling back to the grid, and I think the companies like PSEG and National Grid, and the energy providers that are interested in working with people that are doing this. I mean, because you have to be able to work with your utilities, your public utilities, to integrate it. And I think there's a lot more technology, a lot more. People are aware and kind of hip to it. So we're going to see more of this. I'm excited for it. And it's really funny. I mean, you can have these kinds of changes, these impacts on the world in your life. It's simple choices. You don't have to have a campaign. You don't have to, you know, chain yourself to things. You really just have to look at something and say, you know what, I have another option.
Mm-hmm.
It might be harder. I might have to go do some research or coordinate it. But at the end of the day, this is going to be better for me, for my health, for the environment, for the people around me, and you're supporting local industries and businesses and stuff. So in a lot of ways, in some of these, and you really should see more of these on an industrial scale, because it's good for households, but it's a lot for an individual homeowner to deploy. And for these large farms maybe to sell back or at least offset some of the generation out here. Because a lot of the generation, I think, is coal and mixed fuels, stuff like that. We have a lot of gas-fired power plants and things like that.
It's insane, and it can't last. It's got to change. We have all sorts of environmental issues that have been ongoing, and many people realize these things. It's as elementary as you could possibly imagine. Look at the numbers. The numbers even support this. Even if numbers didn't support this, I would be in favor of going ahead. But right now, let's look at the Tallgrass Golf Course. That's the one with 127 acres. Right now, they pay about $78,000 in taxes. They estimate tax payments to rise to $800,000 to $900,000 a year. That's from the owners of the site when it becomes a solar array. All right, that's like a tenfold increase, and it's going to employ 200 people during its year-long construction. Those are huge numbers. The company has also offered to build a $3 million clubhouse to use as a community center, but civic groups have said, we don't want to get bribed. What do they want? I don't understand this. They're saving money. They're producing clean energy. These people must be bought off by somebody. It doesn't make any sense. It's illogical.
Well, it's not the path of least resistance for them, and it's stupid. I see this a lot. When you have entrenched utilities, and that's the option, people will just say, "Oh, I want my individual little camp." They won't think mm-hmm. at the community level to like organize and create something where I can share in this and do some other. have some other option. Create choices for your community. It takes inertia, right? You have to move in a certain direction for it. And if they're already used to one direction, to move, to make any kind of change is very mentally, I think, difficult. People just want to continue to pay the bill they've always paid since 19 whenever.
You know, you got to change with the times. You really got to change. Things will never get better unless you do this. And I'm just, you know, people who want the right to not have health care and, you know, to live in poverty and to be miserable, they, you know, don't take that right away from me. Ignorance like that is basically what's holding us back from actually moving forward, obviously. But you can't explain that to people who are given far too much attention. You know, this thing, this project that they're building out east, it's not even going to be seen by residents. It's going to be behind a buffer of vegetation and trees. They still object to it. They object to the fact that there are solar panels someplace collecting energy, producing energy, they won't have their polluting sources of power.
Well, in this particular case, I think it's rural area, and I think it's probably people that are used to seeing it look natural.
They
it looks like a farm, but
nuclear power plant in their backyards. These people have absolutely no credence in my eyes.
That's true.
I do not trust them for a second.
Or even looking at farmland, like farmland is engineered land, right? It is land that has been manipulated, it's been cleared, and you're putting in patterns to grow things, right?
Right.
It's a farm. It's the same thing as solar. You're like putting an engineered grid out there on the land. You're engineering and manipulating the land. It's not natural. Unless it's overgrown and you know, not doing anything, it isn't natural to begin with. So that claim, I think, is a little irrational.
And the 60-acre sod farm, really, that's what they want to preserve is a sod farm? What's so great about a sod farm?
Same, yeah, exactly.
It's
same idea.
Grass. It's basically, you know, grass that people put on their lawns to make it look like they know how to grow grass, but it's not. Replace that with a bunch of solar arrays that's actually producing something for the community. Wow, that's a whole lot better. So you can't go to the sod farm and have a picnic. You know, you can't roll in the grass. It's private property, and it's not like you're losing something. It's just basically changing color a little bit.
Yeah.
People like this, they object to wind turbines as well. You know, they say, oh, it spoils the view. I think it is the view. I think it's a great view to have a bunch of wind turbines in the distance or even up close. I mean, I wouldn't want one right on top of my house. It would make a bit of noise, but
they make small ones.
Yeah, they make small ones, and just when we travel overseas, you see a whole bunch of these things. It's really cool. It's really inspiring, and we need to be more like that.
Yeah, yeah. It takes research. It takes education, and it can really wear people out. I mean, I've been down this road with other issues that I'm passionate about, with fuel and different things like that, and. Some of these choices aren't for everybody, and I think where it gets complex is when you're organizing at the community level. But it really needs to be something that everybody understands the community benefits from, mm-hmm. and that's how you bring people in and you say, "Look, this is going to be an adjustment. This is not going to be what you used to or what you've maybe supported in the past." But they, you know, there are ways to enroll people in what is possible and what is exciting about it.
I don't even see how much of an adjustment it is for them.
It isn't, no.
They'll have a solar array where they used to be a sod farm. I mean, big
yep.
whoop. Okay, so they'll have to get used to that.
Right. They don't even have to really do the work of it.
Right.
But it does take research, a little bit of evangelizing, and you know, getting people to come around. I think eventually. People understand that this is really exciting stuff. It is high technology at work, and it's reshaping the world to a degree.
Yes.
And faster and faster.
Do I try to take phone calls, maybe?
I think we could possibly do that. I need to just flip the switch,
okay.
And...
While you're doing that, then, I'll give out the phone number, which is 631-632-6901. I want to hear what folks have to say about this or anything else going on in the world, things having to do with radio, things having to do with politics, tomorrow's debate, dislike buttons, solar arrays, you name it. We're trying to cover everything tonight.
Indeed. So please give us a call, 631-632-6901. So 631-632-6901. This is Off the Wall. Please give us a call and join us.
Hi, this is John Schofield, and you're listening to Radio Free Long Island, WUSB in Stony Brook.
And we're back.
Did we make it?
I think we're here.
Okay.
Hello?
A little crackly, but that's on our end, I think.
Yeah.
The important thing is, if we made it into live Radio Land, I think we did.
I think we are somewhere in Radio Land.
Well, the phone's ringing. You want to
maybe the phone, yeah.
Take a phone call or two?
Hello, you're on Off the Wall.
Hello.
Wow.
Being here.
It's a choppy call here.
I just, about those solar panels, about the those people arguing against the solar panels.
Yeah, sure.
What were the details about the quote-unquote environmental problems they were talking about? Is it like how it's digged up or something like that, or?
I could not find any environmental issues they had with it. It was mostly things about it being an eyesore, about lowering the property value of their homes, but nothing involving environmental issues at all. I mean, it's a solar panel. It's good for the environment.
Yes, I understand. I just don't know what they meant by environmental issues when. It's just like just a counterpoint thing or something.
It's one of these it's one of these arguments that gets thrown into it. It's meant to confuse the situation and bring it back to a debate over whether solar is a or is not a good solution. It's the kind of thing that you would that someone would throw in to progress like this. And, you know, because then it calls into question the idea of the project. And really, that it's not really valid because the world is settled on the idea of solar as something that we're going to do. So whether you choose it or not is up to you. It really doesn't factor into the viability of it. And if someone's choosing to do it in an area, your concern over it being a valid technology doesn't really play in. They've already chosen it. But you okaying it is another thing, especially if you have any kind of skin in the game, so to speak.
I guess they don't like the color of the solar panels.
Right. It's too dark. The wiring. I don't know. I could see all kinds of things. It's a fire hazard. I mean, it is a new technology. It takes grappling with the idiosyncrasies of it, how it works, and
they're not running it, though. All they have to do is live their lives, and something else is changing. It's got nothing to do with them. You know, we listen too much to idiots, people who have no conception of the technology, of the environment. They just want things to stay the same, and they just want their beloved corporate overlords to continue to benefit while the rest of us have trouble breathing as a result. So, you know, at some point we have to say enough already. We heard what you have to say. It's nonsense. We're going to move on with society.
True.
All right.
Do you think there was any complaints with the Calverton solar panels?
I'm not familiar with that. Is this an existing solar panel array?
Solar panels that just set up in Calverton.
Okay. And is it operational now?
It seems operational. I couldn't really tell. Is there ways to tell if it's operational or not?
I would look it up. I'm not familiar with that particular plant or array, but it's. I think it's an indication that these things are popping up and they're going to continue to pop up, and it's a good thing because every time this happens, it's one less polluting source of power that we are dependent upon. And, you know, renewable power, this is the thing. People seem to think that it's renewable, so it's going to be cheap or free. It's not necessarily going to be cheap or free. It's probably going to cost about the same, maybe even a little more. But what you get out of this is the fact that it's renewable. It's not something where you have to keep chipping away at the resources of our planet. The sun is always going to be there. The wind is always going to be there. And you're not depleting that resource.
And you're not putting money, you're not throwing good money after bad at an industry that is entrenched and had seen plenty of money thrown their way. So it's the sooner you can divert that money towards something that is maybe, you know, going to cost a little more, but is clean and maybe non-toxic, maybe better in the long run as far as costs, the sooner you're going to be out of that mindset of continuing to pay the same cost for something that's irresponsible at this point, scientifically.
Those are the people who are panicking. Those are the people who are angry because they're the ones who aren't going to be making money anymore. The oil companies, the coal companies, you know, those people, they're the ones that should be angry and concerned, but we don't have to be. We're not them, and it just annoys me to see average citizens acting like that.
Okay, hey, where are you calling from?
I guess he's not going to tell
you. All right, he's not going to tell me. Hello, you're on Off the Wall. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Cool.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
I just wanted to babble a little bit about the whole social media.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I said all kinds of hateful things about things. I expressed my dislike for Facebook. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I understand that totally, because the base of the platform seems to be for people you know or affiliates of people you know, see the name in the face and be like, oh, here's a display of the news going on or whatever they want to complain about, what they're feeling. Sometimes people are positive. Most of the time you run into the actual problems and just that one.
But it's a little shallow, a little, you know, day to day. It feels a little It's function. It's not form, right? You're not enjoying it. It's more out of duty. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would go with that. Based on even if I did have an intent to go on and just be like, yeah, let's see what somebody else is up to.
Yeah, and it is fatiguing because you're not used to it, and that, you know, it takes adjustment. But you really, I find can get by without it. But it is true. You really there's so many ways that so many moments in life where you kind of have to use it. So you have to see what somebody's doing, or some event is only posted on that medium. It's not kind of as portable as,
you know,
like email.
That's
stuff.
What annoys me more than anything.
Oh,
when
yeah.
somebody
yeah.
posts something that they expect you to know about, but if you don't subscribe to their particular social media outlet, you miss out. I think social media can be used for all kinds of amazing things, but only if it's used in conjunction with other things, not as a replacement for everything else.
Absolutely, yeah. Have a central place and then share it on X Media to get the people that don't use that one.
Or people who use it should at least be considerate. Maybe, like, I don't know if you can take an event and then have it export or send out as an email. Like, if you wanted to forward an event notice. I mean, I don't even know that. I don't use Facebook enough to even care. But stuff like that, being able to have it be a true unified communications platform where it's interoperating with the rest of the kinds of communication methods people use, then maybe, okay, it's bringing in other people. But this sort of exclusivity, it tends to feel like the cool club or this or that. You know, you start creeping into that territory, people are just going to create their own cool things and associate other ways. And people will associate anyway. Word of mouth, all of these tried and true methods still stand the test of time. So who's to say, really? It's just... You fall into that too much, and you look around and you're isolated and you're surrounded by a bunch of people that are concerned and liking and disliking pretty much all the things you like and dislike.
And just remember, you're trusting your private information to a third party, a company. You write a letter, it's your letter. The post office just delivers the damn thing.
Oh, my God.
They don't own any part of it.
They're terrified. They don't want to touch. They don't want to see the contents of it.
No, they don't open your letter and say these words are ours. Now, Facebook, Twitter, all these organizations, to a different degree for all of them, they have a level of control that you don't have over your own material. So that's something to really consider if you're thinking of replacing the standard ways of communication with that.
Oh, certainly. That'd be terrible. The news feed is just kind of whatever they're deciding is dicey at the moment.
Yeah. And again, as I was saying, I alluded to it, the type of person you become. Like, you know, normal people, I think, they can't relate to, like, anxiety over this or that Facebook thing. You don't talk in terms of Facebook. You talk in terms of human issues and human relation, you know, being related and human suffering or excite, you know, those are the that kind of storytelling is how you converse, and I just don't want to. I just can't relate when somebody's upset about something. Facebook
from whatever,
right? Like Facebook drama or like crazy memes and things like that, or just visual stuff. It is to me noise in a lot of ways. I want people that are away from that to speak on a real human level there instead. So. That's my challenge to the world. And anyway, hey, thanks for the call. We are running out of time, so I'm going to let you go.
Thank you.
We have to leave Delay Land. Let's try and leave orderly and safely.
All right. All right, everybody, single file. Did I step on myself?
Get hurt.
I don't know how to do this properly.
Well, I'll tell you. You have to switch your headphones so that you can hear what's going on over the air. Otherwise, you'll be talking over yourself. That's what happened, folks. Am I even on?
Yeah, you're on. I'm not.
I
can't hear myself.
I can't hear anything.
I can't hear the microphone.
Okay. Well, that's because our... Yeah, that thing's broken, I think. I hear you.
Hello. Oh, I'm coming out over the transmit, but not through the... wow, this place.
Okay.
This is a magical place. This is WUSB, Stony Brook. I'm Kyle. This is Off the Wall.
Sad news. That's actually happened more than a week ago. The famous trombonist for the Specials passed away, Rico Rodriguez, at the age of 80. I had no idea he was that old, but I guess time does go by. And we're going to go out with a song you may have heard that he features prominently in. This is In Memory of Rico and the Specials from the early 80s. Write to us, otw@2600.com, and we'll see you here next week.
Good night, E.
Good night, Kyle.
Hey, look, Finn's here.
Messing around.